Okay, Rusty on the pod here with Jen Ward, Jennifer Ward, Jen Ward.
Jen Ward is good.
Ward is good. Thanks for coming on.
No problem.
So I met you a couple of weeks ago at University of South Wales.
Yeah, at a workshop, a CPD session for, was it Mentors? And yeah, Rusty was on the big stage.
Yeah, call it a workshop, it sounds really formal. And I think maybe Mostyn pointed me towards you. Why do you think you pointed me towards you? What's the stuff that...
So I'd met Mostyn last February after I was with a big lecturer from Cardiff Metropolitan University called Michael Malik, and I was like his little sidekick. And I got talking to Mostyn, and I was just telling him about my interests, what I love to do, which is all, I'm sure we'll dive into it later, but positive psychology, well-being. And he's like, do you want a shot? So at that stage, I was only 23, and I obviously I'm just 24 now, but I was still quite naive to where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do. And he's just gave me a shot and said, go on up on stage in 4 weeks' time. Do you want to give us a session? So I did that. And then after that, then he's like, wow, we really love your work. Will you come back again? So he's really been a mentor to me, and kind of, I say it was the first time I put myself on kind of speaking to people about who I am and what I want to do. So it was quite inspiring. And I always say to him, he's a great mentor and a great life advice.
Nice. What were the highlights of your of your big show?
Of my big show. I wouldn't call it a big show. I think it was less than 20 people. But the highlights were what I actually truly believe. I just exposed it as really authentically as I could. And I said to people, let's be honest about our conversations. And people received it really well. And it was just a chance for people to speak about, as a mentor, as a person in life, as to what they're dealing with, how they cope, and sharing ideas. So I really, really enjoyed, I really enjoyed that part.
Nice. And the sense that I got from the evening was actually that it's a really open group of people. They chatted about some of their deepest fears and some of the stuff around imposter syndrome and the challenges and the stress and the that goes with being a mentor or a coach or a parent or a human being. So I imagine that the stuff you that we're going to dive into now would have definitely resonated with them. So what's your story? How did you end up at 10:01 on a Wednesday morning at a podcast with a man sat with a blackboard behind him?
Well, I'll go back to when I was 18. So I did my A levels in Ireland, which was your Irish Leaving Cert. Didn't do that well. Had just come from I wouldn't say a big sporting career, but a very intensive sporting career in swimming. I was just living to swim. I was swimming 5 days a week. Every weekend, my poor mum would take me down to Limerick, which is a three-hour drive away. We'd hop in the pool. We'd drive back on the Saturday night. It's the typical route of a parent with a child who loves something. And as a parent, obviously, you're going to give them everything. I was getting unbelievable dinners in the car. My poor mum, she, bless her, she's a saint. So I was doing that for ages, probably since the age of 13 intensively. And then I started to lose times. I was injured in my back a bit, just lost my way. And then I decided to take a break. Obviously, you take a break from sport, it takes you so long to get back into it. So then I did the typical 18-year-old route, went a bit wild, wasn't performing well in school. Got my results back from my A-levels, my Irish Leaving Cert, and thought, oh my God, I'm not going to get into university in Ireland. So on a whim, completely on a whim, I moved over to Cardiff, started a degree in sport and exercise science. Had a thought I wanted to do physio, maybe mental health. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know what I was doing. I was really lost for like a good 3 years. And then I started to dive into psychology, mental health, psychology, exercise. How can exercise make us feel good? As an athlete, you don't realize the endorphin effect or how great, you know, you get up in the morning, you're eating well, and that whole well-being framework of belonging, identity, social groups. So did a master, did a dissertation in effective exercise on mental well-being. And then I knew, I met great people and they were like, you need to go down psychology. This is your route. So I, on a whim, again, I went up to Edinburgh, did a mental health psychology degree or master's. Loved it. But that clinical route, everything I'd done in psychiatric wards was all diagnosis as a definition, certain treatments work, very intense. And I just was thinking, what about the rest of the people who are struggling on a day just to get out of bed or the general populations. So then I came back down to Cardiff, was working in a school as a behaviour assistant with children. Again, same system of you're this, you're that, take them out of school, punishment. And I was like, there must be more than this. Why is the system so defined and so definite of what you are? So then I went for a PhD offer for positive psychology. Saw the positive psychology again, thought, oh, this sounds interesting. 2 hours later after the interview, they were like, do you want it? We want you. And I was like, okay. And then that was my journey as to why I'm really here now and my, I guess, my academic route. So yeah, long story short.
Wow, I feel like I've just lived 20 years of someone's life.
I didn't tell you about all the ups and downs and the tears and the flying home.
Sure. I want to delve into the, so tell me, I mean, so tell me about swimming. What were the, what were your experiences of swimming? Because that's, I swam a little bit when I was younger. I was definitely thinking we're doing a lot of lengths. This is,
oh, cool. Yeah.
However, so, I only lived a mile away. So I could walk to the swimming baths. You had to go a long way.
Yeah, so really I was exposed to a really great family who were just high in sport. Everyone loved it. And then I was really interested in Gaelic football, you know, our national sport. I loved swimming. And then at the age of 13, they said to me, you need to decide, are you going to swim or are you going to do other sports? If you're doing other sports, you can't. Swimming is a one route. And I was thinking, and my parents at the time, you know, they were so supportive and they left the opportunity up to me. But I decided to go down the swimming route. Next thing I know, I'm up at 6 a.m. three mornings a week, swimming every single day after school. And I mean to say, I would run from school at 3:45 to be in that pool from 4 to 6, home 6:30 to 8:30, do your homework, back in bed at 9. That was my life for like 6 years. And no wonder when you take that away from a child, they go lost because it's a control. My food was controlled. I was seeing a she wasn't really a dietitian, but she was giving me food advice. So I cut a load of food. And then, so I was lucky. So the pool was like a mile away from my house as well. But this high performance centre was down in Limerick. So we all travelled down there every Friday night, come back on Saturday, as I said. But it was so intense. And I saw, if you're good, high performance, you have a physio, you have a nutritionist, you are, you know yourself, when you're in sport, you are everything. And especially as a solo athlete, like as individual sports, you just stay focused on you. It's you in that lane, and all you have to do is get from A to B and get times. So it was really, it was very intense, but I feed it into all aspects of my life at that age. Like in school, it just was a very, like one would say, I was quite an intense child. But I had a dream and I wanted it, so that was it.
What's the stuff you've experienced or found out about in positive psychology that you think might have been helpful for you or other people who were swimming back then?
Yeah, so for those who don't know, positive psychology is like the new wave of psychology. So before, we always focused on illnesses and weakness, and this derived from like World War II, where it was all clinical psychology. We needed to focus on the populations who were struggling, who weren't doing well. Hence why psychology is stigmatized now as, oh, if you're seeing a psychologist, what's wrong with you? So positive psychology is moving away from this now. It is focusing on your strengths, everything that you're good at, what you have rather than what do you not have. So it's all about you and what you can do to improve your life, which is all about quality of life. But as people may stigmatize this, the positive, oh, it's all about, you know, flourishing, the best you, the best self. It's no, it's accepting what you are and using it. So as an athlete, you are not really told to be you. You were told to work at a high performance level. So you're not taught about yourself. You're not told how to improve yourself. What are you good at? You're told to be this certain way. So like for me, the simplest of tools is like what now is what I preach is about like three good things. So three good things that went well after competitions. We were never told that. We were told everything you did wrong. So tell me everything that went wrong and what are we going to do? But it's very intense. So obviously as a child, like we were children, we were only 13 to 17, like you are still growing. So obviously the criticism, imposter syndrome, the perfectionism tendencies heighten. So those simple things like that. Another thing was strength-based. So imposter psychology. So the DSM in psychology is all about clinical. So if you have depressive symptoms, you're clinical depression, if you tick off boxes. The same with ADHD. in positive psychology, there's this root called strengths. So there's 24 strengths. Let's just say courage, bravery. That's how they diagnose people. Not diagnose is the wrong word, but that's how they define people. So what are you good at? And it highlights your strengths and how to use them. If you knew that as a child, you'd know, oh, I'm really good at bravery. I'm very courageous. It is a self-esteem booster rather than a demoralizing aspect. So as an athlete, it's hugely important to recognize what you're good at and how to use it, how to use it in training, how to use it as a motivator. And a lot of the work I do is about the whys of life. So we all know what we want, but why do we want it? Which is a huge important aspect to get you through the tough days. Like this morning, I went out for my run and I really struggled, but the reason I went is because I knew I'd feel better for the day, the why. It's the same with your food. If you know the why you want to eat that food, it'll improve you. You'll want to eat it then because you know it's good for you. So a lot of the whys is to swimming. I feel like a lot of the patches I went through as an athlete, and I'm sure any athlete would recognize, is I didn't know why I was doing it. So having a strong why, I have it on my laptop every day when I open it up, because PhD is very on your own a lot of the time. But as long as my why is consistent, and obviously it can change, but that's really important for me. Sorry, I'm rambling on now.
I'm now feeling bad that I just had some hula hoops to boost my energy, but that would resonate with me. I've done exercise for the last 2 days, and I was definitely thinking that if I go for exercise, I'll live longer.
And that's why
to hang out with my kids. Mm. I just did a talk last week, and I asked lots of players about who are playing in the Prem or involved with England around what the stuff that the pathway gave them that helped them in the kind of professional game, and they spoke a lot about the skills and being adaptable. Mm. And then actually what's the stuff they didn't equip them with, and some of it's pretty dark. So it's like lack of positive feedback, spend my life being told what I'm not very good at, injuries, dealing with that, kind of some dark days around injuries. Coaches lie to me. It's pretty, I guess professional sport can often be, that's the created environment where that type of stuff's pretty normalised. I'm lucky I work with Worcestershire Cricket. I mentioned to you, Tony, but he's had a big impact with them around positive psychology. However, people will say it's just pink and fluffy.
But the scientific evidence, like coming from an academic side, which I hate doing this, but it is working, like it is there. If you look through any meta-analysis, systematic review, these simple interventions can be done every day with an addictive effect. So I would propose it to anyone, and they could come back to me to try and do, at the end of every day, 3 things that went well and a why. And do this for 7 days straight, and you will see that suddenly, all of a sudden, when you're a bit low in a day, oh, what went well today? Or what went well yesterday? Yeah. So I'm a strong advocate for what I do, because I do think, yeah, some things are fluffy, yeah, but some things are very practical, and that's more of a route that I would push.
Yeah, I'm on your side, by the way. I think it's a performance. Mm. I actually think that when people feel that they're valued for the stuff they're good at, that they're connected with other humans, then they'll definitely work harder. I'm actually curious. I want to flip it. I want to have a chat about this. When you worked at the school and the behaviour stuff, you were the behaviour assistant. That title's already killing me.
What it was is I saw that role and I was so desperate, because I'd moved back to Cardiff with no job, and I was like, I went home to Ireland for a month and I was like, oh, I'm not doing anything. I've always been a very purpose-filled person. I need to be doing stuff. I can't sit still. And I just went back to Cardiff on a whim, saw the job, picked the job up, no real idea what I was doing, because I thought I want to do some assistant psychology work, and obviously it's like gold dust. Went into this environment, was in this like downstairs part of a school where they had all the children who were behavior, and as you see with my fingers now, it was demoralizing for me, demoralizing for the kids, the hierarchy then of the school, because the child had felt so set. It was sectioning children who should have been able to let be free. Instead they were punished for their consequences of behaving, misbehaving, or not sitting still in class, when it went against everything I believed in. But I did it for a month because I needed the money, and I knew I didn't do the techniques that the other people did. I did the more reflective kind of work with the children, which I was probably given off to quite a few times. But
how would you do it differently?
It's unfortunate.
How do you think schools could do it differently?
Well, one aspect that I've seen in Baltimore in the US for children who act out, rather than as a punishment, they do doing a lot of meditation, mindfulness work with them. So to realize what they've done and why they've done it. And to some people, this may be like, oh, that's so fluffy and that's so easy. It's so easy for you to say. But all it is asking a child is why they did what they did and making them think. I'm not telling someone to sit down with a child for an hour, do a body scan. It's simply speaking to a child on a one-to-one level and ask them why they did. Another thing is, like, I don't know about here, but in Ireland, we did maths, English, Irish, every subject that was so structured. And I so struggled with that because in school, I was not academic. I scraped by. And now, when I do this kind of work, I, in a way, I am thriving and I am flourishing because you are not defined by a grade. It is the most, how can a child feel they're good enough when they get a C and their friend gets an A and they think, I want to be better? I think the whole schooling system, obviously there needs to be outcomes and measures, but the way a child perceives a grade needs to change. I know in Sweden and the Scandinavian countries, obviously they're the happiest countries in the world, which has just been released on the World Happiness Report. I think like they're in the top five. Their schooling system has changed. They do like an open school framework. So there's no classrooms, you know, sectioning people into classrooms. It's like an open school. I don't know exactly how it works, but the Scandinavians clearly are steps ahead of us, their healthcare system, education. So there's a lot we could do, simple things that we could change.
Yeah, you're fueling all my biases. I remember asking, I went to my son's school and we did a headmaster for a week task. So you were headmaster for a week and your goal was to improve feedback, to improve staff development, to improve mental health. Throughout the school, and one of the things that the kids said was, well, what if there was no detention? So what would the teachers do instead? So I actually thought that's a pretty great question to ask, because they said, you know, the reality is detention is usually similar kids. It doesn't change behavior. It's not that helpful for them. They get labeled with the naughty kid label, and actually so then they started, and by the way, this was like 12-year-old kids, were starting to go, well, actually, maybe if we didn't have detention, teachers would start to ask the questions you just said. Why are we misbehaving? How could they support us? What's that? They're pretty insightful, these 12-year-old kids.
Yeah, they sound it. And that's the thing is, you don't know what's going on. Like a human, we use so many aspects of us. It's the same for a child. You don't know what happened in the schoolyard, what's happening with their friends. All you have to do is ask a child. And I really hate the labeling and the diagnosis and the definition. Like, you see it everywhere, particularly in schools, in psychiatric wards, with just general people. Oh, this is who I am. This is what I'm defined by. It's just for a child. No wonder they act out or feel that way.
What, and so I guess one of your challenges is that you're living in the world of academia and you've got to translate this. So, and I'm not that intelligent. So,
yes, you are.
What would be the
what is intelligence?
Yeah, exactly. I was being provocative. What's the stuff? I mean, what would be the things that you're saying? Look, for this would be really useful for coaches or parents or just generally for adults. This is the stuff that I found through my research and the evidence that would be useful for people to know.
So I'll start with one of my main topics is the gratitude topic. So everyone always says be grateful, appreciative of life. But one of the main tools I use is three things to be grateful for, three people to be grateful for and why. So it will be simply just appreciating the people around you. It's a way to enhance your social relationships. As we see, relationships are key. We need good people around us, positive people. But we need to show our appreciation to them. So it's the same with a football team, is to thank everyone, to be grateful for who's here, because life is so short. We don't know when this game is over, but it's to be appreciative of the people around us. Like for you here today, it's such a great opportunity for me. I'm so grateful. Like the position I'm in, like I have supervisors, you know, directors of studies, and like they are there to improve me. So it is, no matter how hard it is to be thankful that they're there. Another great thing that I love to do is the strength-based stuff, or back to the gratitude, actually, gratitude jar. In a classroom, everyone writes down what they're grateful for today. At the end of the day, everyone picks up the gratitude jar, picks out something random. This is what someone is grateful for today. Show people to appreciate what they have rather than waiting for something to happen. Because we are leading this life where we're waiting for the outcome. We're waiting, like for me now, I'm waiting to get a PhD, but why not enjoy what I have now? And same for kids. It's enjoy what you have now rather than waiting, because we don't know if we'll get it. And someone may criticize that. You know, that's quite pessimistic, but you don't really. So what do you have today to be grateful for? So I'm a huge activist for the gratitude stuff, because it sounds so fluffy, but it's really effective.
Yeah, the it reminded me of when Fletch left the RFU. He had a lot of kind messages from people, and he'd be pretty good at giving gratitude, but he actually said, wow, there might be some people there that I probably could have, you know, stayed in touch with and been thankful for the stuff that they've done. And we then spoke about, you know, you wouldn't want it all said that you wouldn't want to be saying stuff at someone's funeral about them or that you wish you'd said earlier on in their lives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's just that recently.
I think it's really true. So with the gratitude stuff, there's a lot of stuff in the literature about gratitude visits, gratitude letters, you know, write to someone. But my simple thing is just to thank the people around you and to feel appreciative of life. The next thing that I'm a huge activist for is the strengths. So recognizing your strengths and how to use them. So we all kind of, in a weird way, we kind of know what we're good at. But we've been conditioned in this world where you're too afraid to say what you're good at. Because why would you say what you're good at? You should say what your weaknesses are, what you're bad at, how bad you feel. For God's sake, tell yourself how great you are. Tell yourself what strength you have. And that is a key step to get through adversity. So as you speak about adversity, you know, it's like post-traumatic growth. So in positive psychology, instead of the post-traumatic, you know, like PTSD, you know, all about the anxiety and depression, we look at it as a growth. So what's happened to you obviously is giving you a huge adversity, but how can you use that adversity to improve your life, to help you through your life? So it's like a facilitation process. So it's huge in the literature right now, and it's huge by simply asking the question as to what happened to you and how can you learn from it and what has it given you. Nice. So again, it's the strength versus the weaknesses, and there's huge stuff being done on that now, but it's just as we spoke about, making it from academia into real life is the biggest struggle for academics. But for me, I think it's more of a strength of mine, because I struggle with the high literature and the numbers and all everything, but it simply is just making it very simple for people by asking these questions. The strengths as well is huge. It's adversity. You know, it's not all about on a good day what you're good at. It's on those bad days, asking yourself what you're good at and what you can do today. It's like with tasks. So for me, like there's certain tasks I struggle with, but I do them in the morning and then I do the easier ones in the later in the day. It's the same for children. It's like, do your maths homework first if you're struggling. Same with coaches. It's like, take the children, you know, do the hard stuff and then lead it to a positive. Because there's no running away from our struggles. That's the simple side of life. We all struggle with something, but accept it, embrace it, and use it.
Yeah, I definitely need to do the harder things at the start of my list. I was thinking a bit about Jeff Williams. So Jeff told me once that he's playing at a rugby club, and he said, I spend 90% of my time practicing stuff and being told the stuff that I'm not very good at. How do you think I feel? I was thinking, not that good about yourself.
No, but everyone struggles. This is what I always say to like my friends, my work with, we all struggle with something. That's, don't be ashamed. Like, don't be ashamed of what's going on in your life or what's wrong, but try and use it. So instead of running away. Another thing that I really love to do, and this is from Martin Seligman. So he's the positive psychology founder 20 years ago in the US. He did all this work actually in the military. They paid him like, it was 12 million or 1.2 million. I can't remember. Not good with numbers. they paid him a huge amount of money to go into the army and make them psychologically as fit as physically fit. And what they've done is they framed it all around positive psychology, but flipped it on the adversity side. So obviously these military men are going through such adversity such hard times, but how can they use positive psychology in that stick, that kind of framework? So that's why I really criticize someone who'd say to me, oh, it's so fluffy. And I'm like, well, if the army are using it in the US, I think that we can use this in schools with people challenging, you know? So it just making that translation, as we said, but it was a lot of their work is called, so about PERMA, so that's the latest positive psychology, well-being, about positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning, and accomplishment. It is believed if we have those five elements of life, we will flourish. So positive emotions about joy, contentment, moving away from the happiness. So happiness is not a sustainable, okay? And this is what I really am preaching right now, is we need to make well-being sustainable, okay? So we will never live at a constant state, because we're human and we have fluctuations of emotions. But how can we do these building blocks every day to try and make ourselves feel better and to feel better? So PERMA, so that is the huge thing that I'd be pushing towards, is positive emotions. What makes you feel good every day? Contentment, engagement. So rather than moving away from the mindfulness, the meditation, engagement is your state of flow in life. So as a child, you have something that you completely absorb yourself in, whether that be an Xbox game, a playing football, engaging in a conversation. We are trying to create a state of flow every day. And I'm sure with tasks that you have, you'll find your flow. And then it's the R, so that's the relationships, the positive relationships in your life. Who's there for you? How do you appreciate them? How do you show them they love you? But R is a big one. M, the meaning. So I always ask people I work with, people I see, your meaning. What gets you up out of bed every day? What is your purpose? That is one of the strongest ones that we have, but one of the most scariest ones when we're going through a challenging time, because why are you doing what you're doing and why would you get up out of bed? So it's a really big question I would ask any athlete, any person, is the why of life. So that's your meaning. And then your final one is your A. So every day we accomplish things, but I don't know if you've heard anything about grit, perseverance. So yeah. Grit is the perseverance through the tough times. So it's about goal setting. So those three good things happen today. It is the small steps every day to success. Or as I like to say, the small steps to smiles. Because that's what you're trying to do. So that's a big framework that you could use in all your coaching. And it's the same with anything, really. It's a framework and you put it into an intervention, which is the main root of my PhD, is how do I make these well-being theories into interventions rather than just a theory and a model. So I don't, there are a lot of suggestion steps as to the application of it all.
100%. I need to connect you with Sarah Kelleher, who works in hockey, and she is also from Ireland. So she'll talk about lots of this stuff and actually bring it to life. So they did you were talking about meaning. So they did, the other day they did, it was near Valentine's Day, and they did a love letters day. And everyone stood up and spoke about why they love hockey so much. Actually connecting them up. So are there any other practical examples? So I know you spoke about doing almost like a gratitude jar. Is there any stuff that you've seen or you've come up with or other people have used that is making this every day, so making it sticky?
Yeah, so one thing I think would be really helpful in the sports psychology side or with children is called You at Your Best or Your Best Self. So this is a tool that is similar to visualizations. So we all do visualizations, imagining the best performance, the feel of, let's just say for me now, in my past, the feel of the water, the feel of your suit. But this is imagining yourself in the future after everything has gone well. But yet, the minute you tell someone everything has gone well, oh no, I'm afraid it won't happen, the negative side of life comes up. So it's a simple tool that you could do at the end of, like at the start of a training session for the future progression of the tournament. Can we all imagine ourselves after everything is worked out, all the hard grinding, all the work we've done, and to picture yourself fully visualized in that frame of mind with the trophy, without the trophy, with your friends, with whoever it is. It's called Best Possible Selves, and that one has really shown in the academia world, it has been one of the most highlighted ones, which shows effect on happiness, depressive symptoms. But when I use it, the most challenging part is asking someone to not be afraid of imagining themselves in the future. And I too would be the same as, oh my God, I know the way I want this to go out for myself. I want to be like inspiring people, blah, blah, blah. Oh my God, what if it doesn't happen? What if I'm a fraud? I'm an imposter. How do I know this? Immediately. And it's having the ability to challenge those thoughts and say, okay, stop. No one is telling you it won't work out. Imagine it, feel it, believe it. And that's one of my main things is, if you truly love what you do and you truly want to make a difference, why not imagine it? Why not feel it and believe it? So that's one that I really like. But I've obviously added my, as my friends say, a Jen effect to it.
I like it. You've inspired me there. I'm pretty
good.
I'm going to smash it tonight. It's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
What's the all-buts? So what are the watch-outs? So is there any stuff around this where you think either people might misinterpret this conversation and it might be done incorrectly? So have you ever experienced that? Or is there some stuff you're going, yeah, but it might lead to this?
Yeah, so obviously with the... My thing is the issues is with around psychology right now and what people think psychology is. And then adding the positive to it is not, it's not giving it the credit it deserves. So I think there's huge issues around what positive psychology truly is. And as you said to me immediately, the fluffiness of it, because the research is a new science. It's just starting. So for me now, it's great because I'm just starting this journey and I have 2 years, well, a year and a half left in my PhD, hopefully, getting all in. But it's, for me, it's improving the awareness of what it truly is and what is the science-based research. And I am a quite activist for the science side of life. And there must be core elements of that working. But now for me, it's pushing past the barriers of application. And how can I use this as a coach, as a mentor, as a human being to show that it actually works? And, you know, yesterday I was actually at a health psychology, kind of was like a workshop conference, and they were talking so much about credibility, about having a status, about, you know, being qualified. And I am a little bit hesitant as to the qualification for positive psychology. It's like a master's right now. It's, you know, it's called MAPP. And to get on that is like £10,000, £15,000. And for someone who simply wants to make a life better or to help, how do you push past? So I probably would have to frame myself as a well-being coach or a well-being mentor. So they're the huge issues I see right now. The minute you say psychology is, oh, have you done your training? Are you a clinical psychologist? And it's difficult for, like, I'd say to anyone starting now, if they want to do psychology route, it's a long route with a lot of labels. But then what if you don't have the skills? Like, what if you don't have the social intelligence to read people, the emotional intelligence, and the vulnerability of yourself? Because I've noticed as I was piloting my intervention, a lot of my own weaknesses came out and I had to take a lot of time to be like, wow, if I really want to follow this route of making people happier, let's just say, or making people feel more fulfilled, I need to be in a good state. So that's why for me, like, I have to have my core of going for exercise, like really great friends and family, and I have to be living the life that I want to preach.
I
really struggle if I don't feel good. And I'm not talking the flourishing happiness every day. It's just a steady feeling like I'm doing the best I can. So there, like, that would be my thing as well, just to say to people is that, like, the fluffiness, to truly believe what you are. You know, you see so many well-being coaches now, just to make sure that everyone has the right intentions, because you can go washed into this world of just a lot of rubbish.
why would a coach not do this? So why would a coach not focus on what people are good at, talk about strengths, be grateful, model lots of the stuff you spoke about there, about being vulnerable, about being authentic? What's the challenges for coaches, do you think, or for mentors around it?
Yeah, I think it's because of maybe the system we've grown up in, what they've been exposed to as a child. You know, like, for me, I come from a little town on the west coast of Ireland, and if you were to speak about your weaknesses, you would be stigmatized. You need to focus on pushing past them, doing this, being great. And, like, that is slowly changing. But, like, imagine from a coach for a long time ago, this is what they've been told to focus on. So it's a challenging aspect of it. But we are slowly moving. Like, you see the All Blacks, like, I preach by their philosophy of breaking the boundaries, of showing vulnerability. Like, they are one of the most successful rugby teams. So it's recognizing that this is working, and it's, don't be ashamed. But maybe it starts from the person who is being the coach. Are they accepting of what they have, and, like, what is not wrong, but what is a weakness, or what is their strength? Because, yeah, I think truly that may be where we need to start looking at the well-being coaches, the mentors, as how are they doing? Because I truly believe everyone needs a buddy. Everyone needs a friend. Everyone needs an outlet. You can't keep it all in. It is impossible. So it's making sure that we have the workforce ready who are okay and who are getting through, and then they can help others. So that would be kind of my view on that. But obviously, I still am early in my career. A lot of learning curves, and yeah, it's just, you have to just, I guess I'm just testing that one.
Yeah, my observations are that the best coaches do have buddies. Although there's coaches that don't, and they would think probably what you're talking a bit about there was self-awareness. Actually, they would do with a little bit of that.
Yeah.
What's your top three tips from our conversation? I've written down my top three tips from what you've told me that I'm gonna do better.
Oh, okay. My top three tips would be to be authentic. I hugely believe be you. Accept everything you are, your weaknesses, your strengths. Embrace your perfections, your imperfections, and don't be afraid to stand out. Don't be afraid to challenge. Don't be afraid to truly believe in yourself. My second one would definitely be the healthy balance of life. I'm a huge activist for exercise, and I don't mean intensive. I mean, get outside, get in the nature. We all know it's good for us. Do it. Do 10 minutes of it a day. Do 30 minutes of a day. Exercise, physical activity. And my third one, to be grateful, to take your day one day at a time. Take one step at a time, no matter how big a challenge is. And I am saying this from a place of myself trying to write 100,000 words in 3 years. Is the only way I can cope is if I add one brick at a time. So every day, I learned this, that great philosophy from my boyfriend's grandmother, who told me it's a one brick step. So color it, have a big chart, make loads of bricks, and color one brick in every day. And then you see how great progression you've made. So that would be my top three tips.
Nice. The bricks is good. Sarah Keller, who used bricks with the under-18 girls hockey. I'm going to connect you with her in a second.
Yeah.
My three things.
And they're all simple. They're all so simple. You don't need any big money, any big intervention. They are simple steps you can use every day.
Mine are, I'm a buddy to a lot of people. I need to think better about having some different buddies. Gratitude. I'm gonna rock it. I'm gonna smash it. Gonna do lots of random texts of kindness.
Aww, that's lovely.
And three things done well. I don't think we, you know, three would be a push for. So actually, getting people to stretch and think about what's the third thing, I think would be useful. And I'm gonna exercise more because it sounds like it's got you pretty energized.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It just awakens me, and it just, like, I need to feel good. If I'm going to sit there and listen to people or have to sit there for 8 hours, good God, I need to do something for myself before I start the day. So, yeah, I love it.
Nice. Cool. Look, Jen, I really appreciate having you on.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for having me.
Gratitude. We're definitely, I'm keen to follow the journey of what's next for you. And
yeah.
And we'll stay in touch, and we'll maybe do another pod at some stage soon.
Yeah, definitely. I'm still learning, so it's great to share it with everyone.
Awesome. Cheers. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Bye.